We're really going to, once again, begin our discussion of Parshat Vayishlach. We all just came back from break last time. There was a lot of lightheartedness in the air and not as tight preparation as I would have liked, and that led to an interesting dynamic in the room. But the material is what?
It was a spy.
I'm starting again.
We're going to very clearly, hopefully, go through in a more methodical way what we covered last time, and only take it a little bit further. My goal is just to get down the issue today of really the topic of Yerech and its placement here in that encounter with Esav, so that way we can move in next week into issues of Shechem. Starting off, and really we're going to do beat by beat from what we did last time, but we'll move a little bit quicker through the initial pieces and then tie it together much more tightly. If Vayitzi is the Parsha of Yitzhiah, this sounds familiar because we did it last time. If Vayitzi is the Parsha of Yitzhiah, right, and we talked about this extensively, if Vayitzi is the Parsha of Yitzhiah, and we're talking about going into where? Galut. If you were mentally present last time, this should be ringing bells, and feel free to call it out, you'll probably be right. If that's the Parsha of Galut, and we talked about extensively how Vayitzi was very, very much, on every level, planting the seeds and setting the stage for what happens in Galut for all generations of Klal Yisrael, what to accomplish in Galut, how to get out of Galut, then we would expect then, in this parasha of Parsha Vayishlach, a parsha in which Yaakov Avinu, in fact, does return to Eretz Yisrael, that this is going to in some way encapsulate the parsha of Geula, or issues of Geula. We see this return expressed, and I'm framing it a little bit differently. I refined it a little bit more in my head. I went back and re-listened and thought about it more. The return to Eretz Yisrael expresses itself with a new identity for Yaakov. Meaning this return, this Geula moment for Yaakov, produces a new name for Yaakov as the name of his return, as the name of his Geula, which is going to be the name of
Yisrael.
That's the name he receives when he returns back to Eretz Yisrael, or he's about to return back into Eretz Yisrael. If a person has two names, this means that there are going to be two parts or two facets of that person's identity. If a name indicates an essence, then if a person has two names, and that could go with, in this case, two different names. I don't think that that at this point, you know, Yitzchak was calling out, you know, Yaakov Yisrael, where are you? I think that meaning when we talk about having two names, Bisman, is that usually a person has two names that they're given, or if you have the unfortunate or good fortune to have three names like myself, which makes Gabayim crazy. It depends on how you look at it. We have multiple names. So I'm Shlomo Kalman Reuven. I'm all three simultaneously. So here, it's not just two names like many of us have, which are two different parts of our essence. We're saying we're adding on a whole new layer, a whole new floor of meaning to what Yaakov Avinu is about and expressing a whole new facet of his identity. And that's the identity of Yisrael. In which case, how would we formulate the relationship between these two components, between these two aspects of Yaakov? So the way that we defined it last time is that Yaakov is the name that he has on his journey through Galut. Yaakov is the name that he receives when he returns to Eretz Yisrael. That's going to be the name so linked to his Geula. And if we were to put it on a little bit more theoretical terminology, then Yaakov is going to be the name of becoming. Yaakov is going to become the name of being.
Wait, you just said Yisrael is going to be the name of
becoming versus being.
You said Yaakov.
Yaakov. Yaakov is going to be the name of becoming. Yisrael is going to be the name of being. Yaakov is going to be the name of perfecting. That worked out. And Yisrael is going to be the name of reaching perfection. Or to use a less loaded word, completion. What's another way of saying completion in Hebrew?
Shleimut.
Shleimut or shalem. which therefore it's not surprising that in the psukim themselves, at least within the psukim themselves, we see in our parsha in Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Yudchet, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. Yaakov comes to his shlemut in this parsha when he comes and resettles into Eretz Yisrael. There's an aspect of shlemut that's happening in his coming back to Eretz Yisrael, getting the name Yisrael, and resettling in a reality to a certain extent of Geula.
Why wouldn't it refer to him as Yisrael in that?
In that pasuk, I was wondering the same thing. I don't have an answer. It's a fantastic question. Yes. unless I spent time thinking about it. The only thing I was able to come up with when I was thinking about it, which I'm not sold on yet, is that it's actually an active pasuk, via meaning who comes to Shlemut or who comes to Yisrael. Yaakov, vayavo Yaakov shalem, meaning Yaakov. Then Yaakov arrives at his shlemut when he settles, which is also when he embraces his Yisrael side. I'm not told on it either. It's what I was thinking. It's food for thought. It's what I was thinking when I was going through it. But the question is very strong
because it already says shalem, so it's like he already.
No, vayavo Yaakov shalem, meaning he came to shalem. What does it mean that he came to shalem? So that could be he's arriving. He's arriving at this stage. Okay. Yaakov is now arriving as Yisrael. I'd like it to have been more explicit in the pasuk. I think it's a little bit of a stretch. I don't have a better response yet, but both of us can think about it. Similarly, this is reflected in the fact that we saw at the beginning of Vayitzeh that when Yaakov goes out, what time of day does he go out? Does Yaakov go out into Galut, into Vayitzeh? At night. He goes out during the night. And this is reflected in Yaakov's essence itself. Yaakov is the one to mitaken which one of the tefillot of the day? Marv. When does Marv take place? At night. And in fact, when is the most ideal time to say Marv?
When night starts.
Exactly. The beginning of the night. Excellent. Yes. Meaning, ideally, there are halachic ramifications to this for those who have to say Marv, in terms of what one can and can't do until they say Marv. Marv is supposed to be done immediately at the beginning of the nighttime. Because the entirety of the experience of exile, the entirety of the experience of darkness, is going to be linked to Yaakov. When does the time for Marv end? When the sun starts to rise. And so too does Yaakov's journey come to a close when he comes to his altercation with Esav and the Saroshal Esav as he's about to settle into Eretz Yisrael and come to his Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. And that's why after the battle with the Malach, it says in Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed Bet, in our Parsha, Vayizrach Lo Kashemesh, that after the battle with the Saroshal Esav, the sun comes up for him finally as he finishes his process of Galut and comes into a state of Geulah, the sun shining once again and the circle coming to its full completion. Questions, thoughts, reflections on that piece which we've just recapped very quickly. Was that clearer than yesterday? Hopefully. That wasn't the issue really with yesterday anyway, but hope that was clear. Excellent. Okay. But we already started to struggle with the complexities even at that stage. Good, that's one unit. Now let's start adding the complexities instead of starting to freak out about the complexities while we're presenting this piece. So the complexities brought up yesterday are very real, which is as follows. Yaakov comes back from Galut, and we would expect it to be planting the seeds for the future of Kal Yisrael to also return from Galut and to move into a stage of Geulah. However, the actual story is much, much more complex than that. What happens when Yaakov returns? So he comes back to Eretz Yisrael at the beginning of Parshat Vayishlach, and the first thing he does is prepare to meet Esav. Now, when he's preparing to meet Esav, there is a very strong underlying theme of fear throughout. Yaakov is very concerned. Yaakov is very afraid, not the way we'd expect the exciting return to Geulah, to Eretz Yisrael, to Zion. That's not how we imagine it. First of all, it could be that our understanding of what Geulah will look like might not be as simple as we imagine it to be. But either way, there's an underlying fear through the entire process of the return to Eretz Yisrael, of Esav. Beyond that, we then go through a very long description of the nature of the mincha, of the offering that Yaakov prepares and then gives over to Esav on his return, showing some sense of subjugation to Esav. The final piece of the puzzle, which really kind of drags everything down, is that Yaakov then finally goes to Esav, and when he meets Esav, the first thing he does is bows down seven times. Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Gimel. The Huavar Lif Nehem. They're talking about Yaakov. He passes by before his family. Vayishtachu Arza Sheva Pe'amim. He bows down seven times before his encounter with Esav. Bowing down itself is an expression of self-cancellation. I don't exist. I'm nullifying myself before somebody when I bow down to them. Hopefully not before someone. Hopefully it's only before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning when one bows down, they're canceling themselves before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're putting themselves totally at the other person's mercy. So what's going on here that we have this seeming return to Geula, return to Eretz Yisrael, what we'd like to be a Parsha of Geula? On some level it has to be, because Yaakov does return to Eretz Yisrael, and yet the return is a complex, multi-layered return that most of it seems to be anti what we would think should be the process of Geula, which involves creating a mincha for Esav, a fear of Esav, and even bowing down to Esav. It's a very problematic return. And even in the concept afterward, when he finishes his confrontation with Esav, we then get that pasuk that we mentioned before, in Perek Lamagimel Pasuk Yilchet of Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. Yaakov comes Shalem. He gets to that place of Shlemut, the physical, he comes to a place of Shlemut and he rests in Shechem. Rashi, who quotes the Medrash there, says that he's Shalem b'mamono, Shalem b'gufo, Shalem b'torato. He's Shalem in his monetarily, Shalem physically, Shalem in terms of his Torah. He's totally complete and everything is good. What's the only problem with that?
That he has an injury to his ear.
He's not totally complete. He's limping. And even if you want to say, I went and re-looked up the source. It's interesting that Meirabi didn't point this out, but actually, that Chazal, which Rashi quotes on the spot of Vayavo Yaakov Shalem, so when it says Shalem B'gufo, it says that he was healed from the limp that he had. However, even if Yaakov, the individual, is healed from the limp, how do we know that the limp or the damage that Yaakov receives to his Yerech, regardless of whether he is Shalem, is something which does continue on eternally?
We don't eat.
The Gidon Asher. We're not allowed to eat the sinew that's inside of the Yerech of all animals, meaning that once it's expressing itself on an eternal level, in a halakhic reality for all generations, then even if, whether you want to say how could it be that Yaakov is both Shalem when he comes to Shechem, but at the same time he's limping, as my Rebbe put it, or if you, I mean, I think more just if just utilizing the Midrash in its totality, which I think is what one needs to do, where Rashi, quoting that Chazal, says, no, when he was healed from that wound that he received, it may be that he was healed, but the very fact that that limp continues on throughout history in the form of the Isser of eating Gidon Asher shows that it's not completely healed on a full way, in a full level, in a way where we're able to move past it. Because we're not moving past it, we're still living it today halakhically every single day when we eat meat. Okay? So we see the complexity here of the return and the nature of the return and how it's this return to Geula that's having a lot of issues inside of it. Questions, comments, thoughts before we take it a step further? Was that reference to last night?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You mentioned that Yaakov, like, since he was coming out of his own galut, we would think that Bnei Israel would also come out of their own galut. What does that have to do with Bnei Israel?
In the continued theme that we're using of the Ramban's, Nachmanides' framing of this book as Ma'aseh Avot, some point name you're writing, if you can't read this anyway, Siman Lebanim, Siman Lebanim, I was trying to make my handwriting look like ancient. Ma'aseh Avot Siman Lebanim, then if Yaakov, the individual, who's in fact even receiving the name Yisrael, if this is his parsha of exile, and then the next our parsha is now the parsha of return, it should be the seed, setting the stage, being the paradigm for what the return for Israel itself looks like at the end of days, in the Ma'aseh Avot Siman Lebanim level. So the question is, again, what's happening here? And to do that, we're going to come back to what we attempted to...
Israel would get wounded soon?
So we're going to have to unpack who's getting wounded, what does the wound mean, what is the Yerech, what are the implications of that, and how is that going to play out over history, as is expressed by the fact that we're not allowed to eat the Gidon Asher throughout history itself. Okay? So let's do that, hopefully, again, a little bit clearer than we did 2 days ago. Okay.
Shoot.
You okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the actual wound that Yaakov receives. In the middle of Perek Lamed Gimel, the story really takes place in Lamed Gimel, Chav Gimel, to Lamed Bet, in those 10 psukim. in the middle of Perek Lamed Bet. If you want to take a look at the Pesukim inside while we go through the story, Yaakov battles the Sarosha Leisav, this angelic figure which is connected to and representative of Esav. During that battle, Yaakov is struck on the Kaf Yarech, meaning also recognize what's happening in the story in that sense. When the Sarosha Leisav realizes that he's not able to win against Yaakov, the moment when it's clear that Yaakov is going to be victorious, that Yaakov is the victor, it's at that moment that he at least wants to leave him with some sort of damage and therefore slams him on the Kaf Yarech. And that's the damage that he's able to leave despite the fact that he has lost. So a different way of framing the story, just in recognizing what's happening and who's ending up where.
So it's not the Malach is there to sort of bring something out in Yaakov or to bring him to a new level, in a sense. It's that the Malach is actually there as an adversary. Does that...
Those two things, Hashkafali, could be the same thing. What is a true adversary in life? What's the Yitzhar Hara doing? What's anything that we receive in life that's a challenge? Is we could lose, we could win, and if the only reason we're faced with that challenge is with the attempt to overcome.
Yeah, but I mean the fact that he still wanted to leave him with some kind of injury even after he did overcome seems like there's...
Yeah, the Yitzhar really, really wants to win and will take whatever wins it can get.
Okay. I don't understand how that translates symbolically, that he had to leave him with some kind of...
Think about it. I mean, I'm trying to personalize it, but even think about any instance where any of you have struggled with the Yitzhar Hara in your own lifetime, with battled against adversity, internally or externally. Let's talk about it internally here, since there are many comparisons between Esav and the Yitzhar Hara, where we're able to overcome and not do the thing that our Yitzhar Hara wants us to do, but yet the Yitzhar Hara still manages to get us to slip up a little bit.
Okay.
It'll take whatever it can get. Yeah. So he leaves him with this damage in the Kaf Yerech. And in fact, Yaakov leaves that entire scenario. If you take a look inside in Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed Bet, and Pasuk Lamed Gimel, let's hear the end of that story. So Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh, again, indicating this rising of the sun, finally the ending of Galut, the overcoming of the Shor Shel Esav, and Yaakov being able to, or now as Yisrael, being able to come into the new day of being Geula, coming back to daylight. So Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh, Kasher Avar Penuel, but then the other half of the Pasuk is the exact opposite. On the one hand, the sun rises. On the other hand, V'hut Tzolia Al Yericho, but he's limping on his leg. Both within the same Pasuk. And because of this limp, Al kein lo yochlu bnei Yisrael et gid hanasheh. Therefore, bnei Yisrael cannot eat the gid hanasheh, asher al kaf hayarech, which is inside of the thigh. Ara yomazek inaga bekaf yarech Yaakov begid hanasheh. So we're not allowed to eat the gid hanasheh because of this damage that Yaakov sustained in the battle with the angel, despite the fact that he wins and comes out and the sun rises. He leaves with a limp that leaves us with a national, as a Jewish people, we're not allowed to eat the gid hanasheh for all eternity because of this limp that Yaakov receives from his battle with the Sarosha Leisav, despite his victory. Yes?
Wait, can you explain the sun rising, with the night and the sun?
Meaning, like I talked about before, if Galut is always compared to and embodied in the concept of darkness, therefore, Geulah is going to be the sunrise. Mm-hmm. So in the same pasuk, he talks about the sun rising and the seeming coming out of Yaakov from Galut into Geulah.
And being Yisrael.
And being Yisrael and being complete and being Shalem in the same pasuk. And he's limping. So is he Shalem? Is he in Geulah? Is he not yet finished? Does he have things to perfect? There seems to be a duality, a struggle here even within the pasuk. Mm-hmm. He's coming out into the sunrise, but he's still limping. So is he perfect? Is he not perfect? Is he done? Is he not done? What's happened to Yaakov? So let's unpack it a little. And this is where things got tricky for us yesterday. Let's do it slowly, carefully, and clearly. What is the Yerech? What does it mean to limp on one's Yerech? So we started to examine last time other points in Chumash where the term Yerech appears, to try to get a theme. When one wants to understand a word in Chumash, look for other places where it appears. Tippi and I actually had a conversation yesterday. She brought up another example where it appears in Tanakh.
Yifat brought it up.
Yes. Credit where credit's due. And we talked about it, and we found a way to link it in and how it really does continue to include this theme of Yerech that we're talking about. So where does Yerech come up? So two times that we talked about yesterday, which are two examples of the same thing, are in the place of taking a Shvu'ah. In Parshat Chayisara, in Perek Chavdalet Pasuk Bet, Avraham makes Avimelech swear not to find a shidduch for Yitzchak from within his land, but rather from his homeland. And in order to take that shvuah, he tells Avimelech, "Sina yadcha tachat yirechi." Put your hand on my yerech. Why does there need to be a hand put on the yerech of Avraham by Avimelech in order for that by Eliezer in order for that shvuah to take place? We see a similar shvuah happen between Yosef and Yaakov. That Yaakov, at the end of his life, he makes Yosef promise not to let him be buried in Mitzrayim, but rather he wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And in Perek Mem Zayin Pasuk Chavtet, Yaakov tells Yosef the same thing. Sim na yadcha tachat yirechi. Put your hand on my thigh and take a shvuah that you won't let me be buried here, that you let me be buried in Eretz Yisrael.
Yosef
puts his hand on Yaakov's yerech as Yosef takes the swear that he will not allow Yaakov to be buried in Mitzrayim, but he'll take him back to Eretz Yisrael, which in fact he does at the end of Sefer Bereishit. So on the one hand, the Yerech is being used in the Shvuah. Now, why is the Yerech being used in the case of a Shvuah? So Rashi, in that first instance in Chayesara, points out that the reason why that is because when we take a Shvuah, l'fi shehan, this is in Rashi, Perek Chavdal, Pasuk Bet, on Tachat Yerechi, l'fi shehanishva tzarich sheyitol biyado chifetz shel mitzvah. That when a person takes a Shvuah, they have to hold on to a chifetz shel mitzvah, which even in today's American society, we still have a concept of that. Right, where does that come from when you testify and you put your hand on a davar shel mitzvah and you put it on a chumash or a tanach or an Old Testament or a New Testament, whatever the case may be, or you have to abstain for it because you realize it's a shvuah and it's not a simple thing to do. But where does that come from? There's a concept of putting your hand on a davar shel mitzvah when you take an oath. They didn't have a Torah, they didn't have mitzvot back then. The one mitzvah that Abraham did have was the mitzvah of Brit Milah. And so the only chefetz shel mitzvah that there was the makom of the Brit Milah, and that was where Eliezer and Yosef took their shvuah.
No.
That was where they took the shvuah. Tachat yirechi. I assume that I'm understanding it as, because of the confusion from yesterday, that somehow there's an indication of tachat yirechi. They didn't say put your hand al yirechi. Perhaps the tachat yirechi is an implication of putting it on the davar shel mitzvah of the Brit Milah, and the tachat, the yerech itself is the thigh.
Okay.
That's, and I spent time working that out also. Yeah. Yes. So the yerech is the thigh, but it's around the area of the thigh, tachat yirechi, and it's utilizing the davar shel mitzvah in order to make that shvuah. In a similar but different context, the beginning of Sefer Shmot, it lists all of the descendants of Yaakov and refers to them as follows in Shmot, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Hei, the very beginning of Sefer Shmot. Vayhi kol nefesh, yotzei yerech Yaakov, shivim nefesh. All of those that went down with Yaakov to Mitzrayim were 70 souls. How does it refer to Yaakov's offspring?
Yotzei
yerech. Those that are coming out beyond the yerech. What's the connection between the Brit Milah and offspring? One comes from the other, meaning the two are clearly linked, even though one is referring to or indicating towards the Brit Milah and one is talking about offspring. Will offspring come from one's area of the Brit Milah? So there's a clear indication of the Yerech being linked to the concept of offspring or moving forward or producing offspring or that particular area. Is that clearer than yesterday?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So Yerech is the thigh.
Is the thigh. Yes, that's what I'm going with. After much deliberation, that's what I'm going with. Tov.
Draw a little body.
Mm-hmm. So in order to understand what this means, we're going to make the stick figure that we made yesterday. And divide the human body into three primary parts. The Rosh.
Goof.
The goof. And what we'll call, again, for lack of a better term, the Raglayim. As the three primary components of the human body, let me go through it a little bit more clearly this time before we ask any questions. I think it'll be tighter this time, and then we'll see if we need clarification. Okay? The head, the body, and the legs, which then extend, and this is the part that we struggled with, but the legs, which are then sending beyond the core, the trunk of the body, that which extends beyond them is going to be the legs. The top, the middle, or the core of the human being, and then that which extends beyond the human being. Beyond the body, beyond the trunk, beyond the goof. The Rosh, as we talked about yesterday, Rosh has a connotation not just of being ahead. We got our literal translation yesterday, right? Rosh, yes, is ahead. But on a more theoretical or metaphorical level, the Rosh is much more than that. It's the Makor. It's the source. It's the origin where everything begins. It's the source of all things. You can't do anything in this world unless it starts in your brain. It starts in your mind. It starts in your head. That's the Rosh. That's the source. The primary material for everything that's going to unfold over the entire year starts where? At Rosh Hashanah. It's not just the beginning of the year, but it's in fact the source of everything that happens in that year. The source of the month is Rosh Chodesh. A Rosh is not just the beginning, it's the source. It's the seeds, it's the roots. In fact, you can put that word up. The roots are going to be in the Rosh. If we then move on, then you have the actual body itself, which is the roof, which is mostly self-explanatory. That's the main primary element of where everything is and happens. Right? And if you want, if this is the roots, if we were to just extend the mashal, what would this then be?
The trunk.
The trunk. Below that, you have the raglayim, and here's where it gets a little bit more nuanced, so let's see if we can follow this through. On the one hand, the legs are that which move the body around. Great. As always, a few minutes, I apologize.
Why come early?
You come early for me, but late for you, and I don't know if there's anything wrong with that, because I've never been outside of my life. Below you have the raglayim. On the one hand, they're that which move the body around and get them from place to place. On another level, it's the part of oneself where he or she extends beyond themselves as an individual. This is my trunk. This is my core. Where do I extend beyond the core of my being? That goes down into my legs. That's the extension of myself.
Oh, it's funny.
Yeah.
This tree's upside down.
Excellent. What would then the raglayim be?
The branches.
The branches. Mm-hmm. I think. According to Kabbalah, this was not accidental, this was intentional to be. Alpi Kabbalah, the entirety of reality, and therefore, as we've talked about, man, reality, and the Mishkan are all going to be parallel to each other. We're leaving the Mishkan out for the moment, but man and reality are parallel. According to Kabbalah, the reality is in the image of an upside-down tree.
Wait, what?
Reality is in the image of an upside-down tree. That's all over Kabbalistic sources. Why is that the case? Because we talk about all the time spiritual roots to all physical things.
Why is that upside down?
Because the roots are up there in Shemayim.
Okay.
And it's upside down, right? Upside down. It's an upside down tree. The roots, the source of everything, is all the way up top at the source of all things. It comes down into the trunk, and then the branches are the farthest reaches of that thing in its final expression, which are going to be in the branches and the leaves. Branches or leaves are also the extension of the primary element, which is the trunk, but the extensions, the branches or the extensions, or going beyond the core of the being, that's the branches, that's the raglayim, those are the feet. Same thing in terms of more parallels of these threes. We have, if you wish, avar, hoveh, and atid. Past, where things come from, their source. Hoveh, the present, the action, where we are. And atid, where we're headed to in the future. When we talk about now, this is where we're going to plug it all back in. We mentioned very quickly at the end yesterday about the concept of shel shelet hadorot, the chain of generations. In Hebrew, shel shelet is a chain. What's at the core of the word shel shelet? Meaning that a true chain, according to Jewish thought, for something to actually be a legitimate chain, it needs minimally three links. Past, present, future. If you want to put it in terms of human beings, in terms of shel shelet hadorot, if you have three generations, what do you have? You can look at it from two perspectives. There's myself, my father, and my grandfather, or my grandmother, and my grandmother, right? My parents and my grandparents. Or if you want to stand in the center of that, you have the individual, their parents, and their offspring, where I come from, my avar, who I am, my hoveh, and where I'm going, where my legs are taking me, my atid, my future, where I'm headed, my offspring. The legs are going to be indicative of all of these things, of the branches, of the offspring, of the future, of where I'm going. That's what the legs are doing. And the Yerech, therefore, makes sense to be a reference to Yotze Yerech Yaakov, Yotze Yerech, our offspring, because the legs, the Yerech, is the beginning of the process of the production of offspring, of the offspring actually manifesting themselves, of extending beyond oneself. If we're talking about threes in Shalshalat HaDorot, dividing everything into three, what other term comes to mind? New material. What other term comes to mind? When we think of three being significant in creating a chain.
Evan.
What?
Evan.
Evan.
Like the odd bending.
Why that's three? Where's the three?
That's not three.
In three. Yeah.
Shoshur Golem.
For sure, yes. I'm thinking even yes. On your there, we that has to be unpacked on an even simple level. Something you use in halacha all the time, in Gemara all the time. The concept of three. Why is that important? Thank you, chazaka. Right. That once something happens three times, you're establishing it very strongly because you have a past, a present, and a future. You have three instances of something. You're embedding it more concretely into reality. What is the other primary three which we just sang about at the Pesach Seder? Unsurprisingly.
Pesach Matzah Mar. I'm singing that too.
Shalosh Miyodea would have failed in this group.
Oh, Avot.
Thank you. The Shalosh Avot, right? Everybody's already drunk by that one. Shalosh Avot, right? That means that essentially the Avot are three in creating that reality of grandfather, parent, and child, or individual, parent, and grandparent. There's intentionally three Avot as creating that which then is able to produce all of Klal Yisrael. It's a great answer. It's totally true. But the other one was like in the same. It didn't even cross my mind, but it's great. Yeah, good. Tov. Lifespans are designed in this world in the same way that you have this three-generation piece of banim ubnei banim. We talk about all the time in our liturgy. Banim ubnei banim. There's an expectation of seeing your children and your grandchildren. Three generations, more than that, is a gift. But there's an anticipation of seeing banim ubnei banim, children and grandchildren. That three-part link or chain. Speaking of three-part link or chains, is also a beautiful remnant of this in Kohelet Perek Dal Yud Bet, which says hachut hamishulash lo bimhera inatek. A rope comprised of three cords cannot be easily destroyed, implying again that concept of chazaka and three. And chains or ropes or whatever it may be, creating a system is going to be a system of three is more unbreakable, has more stability than anything else beforehand. Yes, Kohelet Dalad Yudbet, Hachut Hamishulash, Lo Bimhera Yenatek. So you have the past, present, and future being represented in an individual themselves. This is your past, this is your present, this is your future. In a person lies the potential, the capacity, and the information. This is just to crystallize it. In a person lies the potential, the capacity, and the information. Take all of that which has been produced in the past, bring it into their present, through you, and then give it over to your offspring. That's how a person is designed. Tov. We'll skip a piece here that is important, but we're short on time.
What was the last thing you said?
In a person lies the potential, the capability, and the information to take all that which has been produced in the past, bring it through the present, and produce the future. Give it over to our offspring. There is an important piece missing here, but it's okay. We need to wrap this up, and we need to move on. And in the material, we also need to go on to Rambam. What we're missing is how does that relate to Gid Hanasheh, and what does Nasheh mean? It's okay. if you want to talk about it after, but we're going to leave that behind. Let's now bring it all the way back. Yaakov is being damaged on his Yerech. What would therefore the... as a Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, what's the implication of Yaakov being damaged on his Yerech? What's being damaged? His offspring. The future that comes out of him, that which is going to come next. So what does it mean that Yaakov is Shalem when he's limping on his thigh? What does it mean that Yaakov is Shalem? And that could also be the answer, perhaps that's the simple answer to your question, Bracha, in the Pasuk. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. What does it mean that Yaakov is Shalem, but he's limping?
He himself is fine. His future is not.
Not his future, but his?
Future generation.
His offspring. Mm-hmm. Meaning that Yaakov, the individual, at this point has reached Shlemut. And has reached a level of Geula. But his offspring still have a long, difficult history ahead of them. There's going to be a long history of Klal Yisrael limping their way forward until they themselves come to completion. That's the distinction that's being made. And then there's no longer a contradiction. The son comes up for Yaakov. Yaakov comes to Shalem. But because of the damage that's done to him, the indication on the Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim level is that his children are not yet Shalem. His offspring are not yet Shalem, and they're going to have to go through a difficult process of coming to completion over the course of time. We see this in the Psukim themselves, and with this we'll conclude, in the interaction with Esav as well, in now a beautifully explicit way, which we may not have seen in this light without this background. If you look at the end of the confrontation between Yaakov and Esav, take a look at Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Yud Bet. They have whatever interaction they have, and hopefully we'll unpack it more over the coming days. Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayomer, Nis'av ve'elcha ve'elcha ne'edecha. Esav says, come, let's journey together. Yaakov says, no. Vayomer elav. Adoni, Yodea, I can't go with you, says Yaakov. I can't go with you down the journey. I'm not ready to complete history yet. We're not ready to come together and figure out, we need to figure out why. What's inhibiting him from being able to have a conclusion to his final confrontation with Esav? Kiel adim rakim. The children are weak, the children are soft. Vatzono bakar alot alai, udvukim yom yachad, vameitu kol atzon. My children and my sheep and my flock, literally and metaphorically, nobody's ready yet for this final confrontation to come to its conclusion, and therefore I can't walk with you. Yavor na adoni lifnei abdo, my master Esav, go in front of your servant, mi Yaakov. Vani et nahalat iti l'regel hamilacha asher lefarei l'regel yiladim v'chule. Yiladim ad asher avo el adoni se'ira. You go ahead, you go to Seir, it'll be good, I'll follow behind you. That's letting Esav get ahead of Yaakov. What does it mean for Esav to be ahead of Yaakov? Esav's in control. And in fact, reaching back to our Toldot discussions, what do we know about the relationship between Esav and Yaakov? It's a seesaw relationship, which is what you're doing with your hands, and like you said, Elior, yes, one is up and one is down. Meaning, Yaakov is saying, until my children reach completion, we're down. So who's going to take the lead? Who's going to be in control? Esav, you go ahead. Ata Adoni, you, my master, you go ahead. We'll catch up to you, and we'll meet you at Seir. And Chazal point out, what's problematic about saying that he's going to meet up with him in Seir pretty soon?
He doesn't
at all. And Yaakov is nishamet. How is Yaakov basically lying through his teeth? I'll meet you in Seir, see you later, run! You know, like, what's happening? He never goes to Seir.
Okay, because it hasn't happened yet.
What pasuk tells us what it's going to look like when that happens?
Something hard to say.
Yes, that pasuk we should keep quoting about Esav. Ve'alu moshi'im har Seir. To do what? Lishbot et har Esav. Then, ve'haya Hashem Amelucha. Then God will see his expressed kingship in the world. Valu Moshiim, the saviors will go up on Har Seir, will finally go to Har Seir, because then when we come to a place of Geula nationally as a people, we'll be able to judge Esav and overcome Esav. And then God's glory will be revealed to the world. That's when we meet up with Esav at Seir, when we, the children, fix that limp, get over our inadequacies, and are able to then meet Esav and his descendants at Har Seir. So what that means is this is setting the stage for problems to arise with his children, which then is a perfect segue to what happens next. What happens right after the confrontation with Esav in our parsha of Vayishlach? Shechem, what happens in Shechem? What happens first in Shechem? Dina's raped. Meaning the first thing that happens is we see the first breach into the purity of the offspring of Yaakov. Understanding what happened with Dina, understanding the nature of Shechem, why that has to happen in Shechem, and what Shechem means, that's exactly where we'll pick up on Monday. But that's exactly what this is leading us to, is while this will happen in the future, first we're going to see a breach in the children of Yaakov, a breakdown in his offspring, and one which honestly in different manifestations, like we talked about previously, is going to see itself out even through the brothers themselves throughout the rest of the Sefer, to be continued on Monday.